This is a recording of David Rees describing his take on the so-called war on terrorism and other current events. He spoke at the University of Connecticut at Storrs on March 27, 2003. David Rees is best known as the creator of the comic strip Get Your War On. The strip uses office worker clip art to satirize U.S. politics and the war on terrorism. The artist began publishing his satirical commentaries with the beginning of the U.S. bombing of Afghanistan in October 2001, and the comic strip quickly became a popular stop for web surfers. Get Your War On has been picked up for publication in Rolling Stone magazine, and the first several months of strips have been collected into a book. Royalties from the sales of this book are donated to a program to remove landmines in Afghanistan. The book is published by Soft Skull Press. In his appearance at the University of Connecticut, David Rees told the story behind his work and shared some of his views regarding current events. Here he is introduced by a member of the university's Drug-Free Student Association, which hosted the event.
Thank you all for coming. My name is Brian. Tonight, this is all done through the wonderfulness of Russ here and the Drug-Free Student Association. And so I want to thank all you for coming. And as I mentioned before, we have some books for sale for this lovely man here after everything's done. And we're going to be passing a box around to take donations for the Adopt a Landmine Foundation. I mentioned this before, but some people came in late, so I'm going to mention it again. But without further ado, I'm going to introduce David Rees. So take it away.
Okay. I'm really sorry that I'm late. We picked up the rental car, and then I picked my wife up from work, and then we got in a big fight about this in the car, actually, because when I do MapQuest, I always assume when it says, like, it's 111 miles from Brooklyn to University of Connecticut, I always assume that I'll just be driving at 60 miles an hour the entire time, so it'll take 111 minutes. And I totally forgot about leaving New York on a Thursday afternoon. So I'm really sorry that we're late getting here. I really appreciate everyone sticking around. Okay, so that's great. So I'm happy to be here, and thanks for having me. I'm here because I'm here to show you some of these cartoons that I made. The series is called Get Your War On, and for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a satirical comic strip that I started on October 9th of 2001. The significance of that date we'll get to in a moment. I can't open your Yukon Husky water. I'll try one of these. Yeah, sorry. Are you guys still in the tournament?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
I believe the game tonight.
Yeah.
I grew up in Chapel Hill. As you know, they've fallen on really hard times with the ascendancy of Matt Doherty to the head coach position, and this is, I think, the second year in a row where they didn't even make the tournament. So I don't even know who's in it this year because I'm not watching because it's too painful. But anyway, so this is a series of comics that I started making in October of 2001. And initially I posted them on my website just kind of for myself and then for my friends. And then it gradually, or by gradually I mean immediately, turned into this big thing that went all over the internet. And now it's been published in a book form, a collection of these comics, by this publisher based in New York City called Soft Skull Press. So they publish the book, and then they send me around to events like these to show you some of the comics. So that's what I'll do. I'm going to use your almighty overhead transparency projector to show some of the comics. However, I'm going to warn you that I'm usually using overhead transparency projectors that are the old school, like, tin boxes with a light bulb and a plate of glass, and so I have actual transparencies. And I know that when you use one of these futuristic ones, sometimes it doesn't come out so good, but we'll try. But anyway, so as far as the structure of the evening is concerned, you know, I'll show some of the comics and talk about them, and then if you have questions, I'm happy to answer your questions about the comic or what little I know about the situation in Afghanistan in regards to landmines. And I realize, as well as you do, that everything I'm about to say or show you these comics is totally out of date because, of course, we've moved on to the next war. And this book came out when people still could find Afghanistan on a map, which I guess is no longer the case. So I didn't really have time to make that to bring so many of the comics about the current situation in Iraq. But anyway, so this is going to be a kind of like a somewhat nostalgic evening when we'll recall bombing campaigns of months past rather than bombing campaigns, you know, that are around the corner. Okay. And the only other thing that I want to say before I get started, for those of you who aren't familiar with this comic, is that one of the things about it is that it has a lot of profanity in it. And I always like to just say before I begin, if there's anyone who's truly offended by profanity, you know, there's a fair warning for you because it does have a lot of profanity in it, and I'm happy to talk about why that's the case or whatever. But I don't want to, like, poke my thumb in anyone's eye, so to speak. Okay, let's see how these look. Oh, it looks okay. It's legible. Okay, great. And then the only other thing, I forgot to mention this. I don't know, because this is all at the last minute, and I'm totally unorganized. Can you run a VCR tape in that through that thing?
He's
you can?
That.
Oh, okay. Well, I also have, at the end of the talk, if some people want to stick around, I think I brought a videotape of a D minor in Afghanistan actually detecting and beginning to remove a landmine. And for those of you who are interested, I'm happy to show that afterwards if you want to get a sense of where the money is going. Because when you buy this book, it will comfort you to know that I'm not going to make any money off it because we're donating all the royalties to this landmine removal group in Afghanistan. So anyway, so there's that too, if that floats your boat. Great, let's get started. So I wanted to start actually to give you, because this is an academic institution, I wanted to give you some kind of like a context or historical background so you can get a sense of the tradition that I've been working in with my computer clip art satirical cartoons by showing you some computer clip art satirical cartoons actually from the 19th century, which was this this strip that ran years and years ago called Get Your Civil War On. And this I found in my grandmother's attic, and it's obviously about the Civil War. The guy says, holy shit, the southern states are seceding. I heard they're even going to print up their own money. Ha! Stupid fake-ass southern money. Maybe they can use their fucking fake money to rebuild Atlanta after we burn it to the ground. And there is another one that wasn't destroyed in the fire. I'll show you that one. This is from the spring of 1861. He says, oh man, I've been looking at those Matthew Brady daguerreotypes of battlefields. That shit is no joke. I wonder how many people are going to die in this Civil War. 10,000 or 15,000? Holy fuck, what if the death toll reaches 20,000? He says, if the death toll reaches 20,000, I'll say, congratulations, death toll, you're 1/30th of the way there. Because 600,000 people died in that war, amazingly. Okay, so that's the historical background. Let's focus now on what I did within that tradition. This was posted, this is the first night of me making these comics. It was like 2 in the morning on October 9th of 2001. Here's the one that kind of started the whole thing off. He says, oh yeah, Operation Enduring Freedom is in the house. Oh yeah, Operation Enduring Our Freedom is in the motherfucking house. Yes, Operation Enduring Our Freedom to Bomb the Living Fuck Out of You is in the house. That's where it all began. Okay. this is more work from the same night. He says, oh my God, this war on terrorism is going to rule. I can't wait until the war is over and there's no more terrorism. I know, remember when the U.S. had a drug problem and then we declared a war on drugs and now you can't buy drugs anymore? It'll be just like that. Right, God, if only that war on drugs hadn't been so effective, I could really use some fucking marijuana right now. Okay, and this is also from October 9th. Now, October 9th, of course, was 48 hours after we began Operation Enduring Freedom, which began, of course, with bombing Afghanistan. Like I said, I had posted these comics to my website. Now, I had a website prior to Get Your War On, but it was the home to just a couple apolitical, goofy comics that I used to just make in my spare time for kicks. And I was going to update my website that night, but I kind of just felt like it was totally ridiculous and stupid to continue with these kind of like apolitical comics in light of everything that was going on around me, especially since I felt at least like no one really seemed to be talking about what Operation Enduring Freedom would feel like for the people on the ground, which is, of course, the innocent civilians of Afghanistan. Most of them had no stake in the war against America or the war on terrorism. But, of course, they were one of the most heavily mined and poverty-stricken countries in the world, which had been suffering from drought for 4 years. And we were beginning to bomb them. And I kind of got this feeling that nobody really cared about what it would be like for the Afghans. People were pretty gung-ho to start the war on terrorism, of course, you know, as I was. Who wouldn't want to fight a war on terrorism? But anyway, and so looking around or, like, listening to, you know, whatever, Jay Leno, fucking whoever, say monologues and joke about Osama bin Laden having sex with a camel, it's all well and good, but I just kind of felt like there was a missing... they weren't really doing justice to, like, the horror of the situation in Afghanistan. So that's why I started making these comics, kind of. Okay, and this is has always been one of my favorites from that first night's work. He says, you know what I love? I love how we're dropping food aid packages into a country that's one big fucking minefield. That's good. Well, it turns the relief effort into a fun game for the Afghan people. It's a game called See If You Have Any Fucking Arms Left to Eat the Food We Dropped After You Step on a Landmine Trying to Retrieve It. Right. Or maybe they could play See If When You Step on the Landmine the Food Package Flies Into Your Fucking Decapitated Head As It Sails Through the Air. So this has always been my favorite strip, so that's why I decided to donate all the money to these guys working in Afghanistan to clean up both the landmines and the unexploded cluster bombs that we dropped on them. Okay, now here's of course, in the fall of 2001, I was living and working in New York City. It was a horrific time to be there, but it was also, in a way, like really inspirational and I don't know what the word is, but anyway, I was in my own way, I was kind of grateful to be there during those days, but it did lend itself to a lot of kind of like wacky situations. He says, if there's one thing I love to see, it's a huge fucking SUV tooling through midtown Manhattan with an American flag flying half-mast on its antenna. What could be less French? That's right, supersize the grief. When we get our grief on, we grieve harder than anyone. Motherfuckers just can't grieve like the USA. And now the world knows how the big dogs grieve. Who wants to grieve with the big dogs? Afghanistan, do you like grieving with the big dogs? Iraq, you can get your little flags ready. Actually, does anyone other than Saddam Hussein even get to own a fucking car over there? Of course, we're on the verge of finding out. Okay. What I'll do now is show you a strip that I never actually posted to the website, but it is in the book, and then I'll show you some supporting documentation, which is quite remarkable. So this is, again, from October of 2001. This guy says, whenever I feel depressed, I take solace in my favorite corporate condolences ad. It's Phillips 66 in the New York Times. It's written from the perspective of angels up in heaven. And the lady is reading from the ad. She says, may you feel our arms around you this day and every other. You should see the light burning in your hearts. Sincerely, the angels who keep you. The angels who speak to us via petroleum companies. What a bunch of patronizing motherfuckers. Wait a minute. Are the angels speaking to us supposed to be dead people from the World Trade Center? What the good fucking goddamn hell are those Phillips 66 bastards getting at? Now, I'm going to show you the ad. This ran in the New York Times in the fall of 2001, along with a bunch of other really amazing and remarkable ads. This one I thought was especially mystical. So you can tell, obviously, from the handwriting that an angel wrote this letter and sent it to us, to America, to Dear America. And it starts off, may this letter find you in the warm embrace of each other, which was a safe bet. And anyway, it goes on, and the letter in and of itself is totally fine and inoffensive. I agree with it. It's just talking about the heroes of September 11th and, you know, everyone needs to stick together. That's fine. But then it ends in kind of like a weird way. It says, your love is so strong, you should see the light burning in your hearts. And I don't know if you can see this. It says, sincerely, The Angels Who Keep You, and then there's a, that's presumably the author of the letter. But anyway, this letter, as it appeared, and this is in the A section of the New York Times. I assume you know how much it costs to take out a full-page ad in the A section of the New York Times. It costs like $6 billion. Only angels can afford to do shit like that, right? But anyway, it says, I always just thought it was so weird that it was signed sincerely, because you have to remember this is a letter sent from heaven to a country which had just suffered an unjustified and totally devastating terror atrocity. And I assumed that it would be signed like with best wishes or like in here with you in your moment of sorrow, the angels. Instead, they signed it sincerely like it's from the phone company or something. And that's when I got suspicious. Like maybe there's too much like a business. It smacks of a business letter. Maybe an angel didn't write it. And sure enough, what we have here, I don't know if you can make that out, is the seal of not of the Archangel Gabriel, believe it or not, but of Phillips 66, which is an international petroleum company. And I just want to show one other ad that ran in the New York Times in the fall of 2001. Now, this ad was placed by Royal Caribbean. I don't know if you can read it. This video projector is... Well, you know what? I'll read it aloud. This letter appeared also in the A section of the New York Times, and it says down at the bottom here, it would take a really large ship to hold all the emotions we're feeling for New Yorkers. Fortunately, we have one. We're honored to launch Adventure of the Seas, the world's largest cruise ship, right here in New York Harbor. And then it has this Royal Caribbean's logo right there. Now, what this is, I don't know if you can read it, but this boat is this huge fucking boat. And it's so big that it hosts all these emotions on the boat. And what they've provided us with is the passenger manifest, and you can kind of see, well, back here in the back of the boat, for instance, we have pride, admiration, and awe are riding on the boat. And then up at the front, down here they have the emotions introspection and patriotism, and whatever. The boat is filled with emotions. And the only thing that I want to point out, I always like to point this out, because it kind of gives away the game, as they say, is that if you look on the fifth column from the left on the top, they have this emotion here, gratitude. You can't tell, but gratitude is down here in like this cocktail lounge area. And then, that's fine. And then third column from the left on the bottom, though, they have this emotion called grateful, who's up by the pool. Well, you're college students. You know that gratitude and grateful is the same damn emotion. It's just a different grammatical form. It's like registering twice on the boat using an assumed name or something. You know what I mean? And what I think is amazing is that it gives it away. The boat is actually too big. They ran out of emotions for New Yorkers, and so they started to fake it and fudge it and use the same emotion twice, which is really amazing, I think. And the only other thing that I want to point out is at the front of the boat, I think I have the zoom of this. At the front of the boat here, there's three emotions. Faith, hope, and charity. Now, faith is down here in the auditorium. Hope is I guess, the captain driving the boat. But then charity, look where charity is on this helicopter landing pad at the front of the boat. Now, this stupefied me. For like 5 minutes, I was looking at this newspaper advertisement like, why charity? Why is charity at the front of the boat on the helicopter landing pad? Of course, until I remembered 1 Corinthians in the New Testament. I think it's Paul's letters to the Corinthians, verse 13. And you go home tonight and look at your Bibles, it will be totally obvious why charity is on the helicopter landing pad. Okay, so that's that. I wanted to just, I'm kind of like dwelling in the fall of 2001 because it was such an interesting time. And I just wanted to show a couple more from that period. So this is from October 14th of 2001. This is when shit was really hitting the fan in New York. It says, holy fuck, anthrax in New York City. We're getting our fucking ass kicked. Seriously, who the fuck are we fighting? Fucking Lex Luthor? When is the goddamn Death Star going to shoot that big-ass laser at us? I know, what's next? George W. Bush is going to hold a press conference and fucking rip his face off, and it's going to be Ming the Merciless up under there? Jesus. Okay. Incidentally, I don't know, you guys were probably in class, but for those of us who are professional cartoonists, that is, we work in our sweatpants all day, At home, I listened to the press conference today with Bush and Blair. You know, Tony Blair, our girlfriend, was over here in the States because they're discussing, I guess, quite heatedly, what the reconstruction of Iraq is going to look like. And anyway, they held a joint press conference today, Bush and Blair. And Bush did not rip his face off, unfortunately. But nevertheless, you get this sense, you know, Tony Blair strikes me as a pretty well-spoken, well-reasoned guy, and he seems to have really, you know, whether or not you agree with his position vis-a-vis Iraq and the new face of whatever benign Western imperialism, he seems to make some effort to present a coherent, articulate case for why we're doing what we're doing. And you get a sense of this when you watch him in Parliament back in London, or when he goes on and faces a bunch of surly teenagers on British MTV, as I think he did a couple months ago. And he seems to also try to do that with the press. He's trying to convince the press. George W. Bush, God love him. You just get this sense, of a sense of disdain for the institution of a free press. And today, like I said, he didn't rip his face off. But you just got this sense of, he just cannot stand having to answer to the press. I mean, the probing, incisive questions of the U.S. press will just not let go of his inconsistencies, right? But anyway, I don't know why I started talking about that. Okay, this is from October 30th of 2001. It's as true today as it was when I made it. The guy says, if you're not with us, you're against us, huh? I like it. It's so nice and simple. When do we start bombing Western Europe? And the guy says, oh, man, tell the boys down at the bomb-making factory to brew up more coffee. They're going to be working some serious goddamn overtime. This guy says, can't we just build a fucking bomb the size of the Earth and cut a hole out of the middle in the shape of the United States and drop the motherfucker around us and take care of business once and for all? Okay, and this one I'm going to show because I posted it about a month after we began Operation Enduring Freedom. This is kind of like a wrap-up of the operation so far. He says, you can see that it's like, I was just getting so intoxicated with my internet power that I started to just rant. But anyway, he says, man, I like a good stiff Operation Enduring Freedom as much as the next guy, but I've reached my limits of understanding. All of a sudden, my fucking mailman is a hero on the front lines of the war against terror. My daughter wants to sell cookies to help the people my nephew's been sent to fucking bomb. I'm supposed to help the FBI find clues and solve crimes? I'm a claims adjuster, not fucking Encyclopedia Brown. Who's in charge of this shit? And this lady is frazzled. She says, agreed, this is totally Looney Tunes. I love that the fate of the world hangs in the balance. Bush is talking about conquering evildoers, yet the CIA can't fucking translate the evildoers' Arabic voodoo spells. The Office of Homeland Security makes the DMV look like fucking Delta Force. And look, I understand why Osama bin Laden sounds crazy. He's an 11-foot-tall motherfucker who lives in a cave. But why does Bush always sound like he's addressing a goddamn Dungeons & Dragons convention? At least I can tear my hair out full-time since I've been laid off. You can see that. That's around the time that I got laid off from my part-time job because of the economy, incidentally. So, now I'm going to jump ahead months and months. These people are sitting around in their kitchenette and they're discussing the difference between Congress's role or Congress's attitude towards the electorate versus the attitude exhibited by one Dick Cheney, who you know is our vice president. Anyway. And they're using the analogy of baseball. We're picking up this comic halfway through. Okay, so the lady with the donut says, I know what you mean. I used to think Congress would be a good team to play for. Then I watched them run to the steps of the Capitol to recite the Pledge of Allegiance, yelling out, under God, like the most annoying kid in Sunday school. Who are you trying to impress, the devil? Fucking get back to work and keep track of our wars. That's when I realized Congress is strictly farm league shit. They'd probably have a bald eagle fucking contest if they thought it would impress us. Right. Whereas Dick Cheney, he's not trying to impress me. He's just minding his business. And that's why he will be the last man walking the scorched post-apocalyptic earth. God will fly down to pour the Gatorade on him. Okay. Now, We started off the presentation this evening with these clip art cartoons from the 19th century to provide like a historical context for this tradition. And what I want to do now is show you some comics that I made in the 80s because they're kind of newly relevant to the Iraq situation with these weapons of mass destruction, which is obviously on our minds. So these are some comics that I made back in the 80s when I was a budding young satirical cartoonist. And you can see that I wasn't as good at drawing my characters as I am now. Now it's like I just draw him like a robot. It's just like Jim Davis with Garfield. He can just draw Garfield like with his feet, probably. But anyway, so it was a little rough around the edges, and the typography and the spelling was a little messed up. But I was a young man. So what was I writing about back in those days? He says, "It's so weird that USA is friends with Saddam Hussein. What's his prob? He looks so angry. What is Ronald Reagan doing with that guy? Duh, USA plus Saddam equal BFF, best friends forever. We are helping him against Iran in a war to keep us safe. It's okay, now shut up. But what if he keeps using chemical weapons? Oh, wait, I forgot. We don't care. Sorry, Kurds, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya." And then they continue to bicker to and fro. I'll just show one more from this series. He says, "Okay, maybe you're right. We should stop Saddam Hussein before he says, 'Let's go crazy.' What should we do? Congress is going to pass a bill that says, 'Blank you, Saddam, for using the chemical weapons we helped you make, dude.' But Reagan did not want to offend him. Sorry, but what can you do? Those Kurds know what it sounds like when doves cry, I bet." And this guy says, this is a dream that you guys are too young to appreciate, but the guy says, "I hope Michael Dukakis..." I'm sure your parents have told you of this legendary political warrior, Michael Dukakis, sitting in that tank with that goofy-ass helmet on his head. But anyway, this guy says, "I hope Michael Dukakis can be our president and stop Saddam one day. Anyway, I've got to make some business deals now. See ya." Okay. It's not much, but I made it using a Nintendo 64 game system, so what are you going to do? Okay. This is a strip from September 27th of 2002. He says, "Well, it's been over a year and the president still can't seem to get around to fucking firing someone for the September 11th attacks. I mean, was that somehow not the most colossal fucking fuck-up imaginable? I don't care if you fucking retroactively fire someone from the Roosevelt administration. Just let me know that if I can get fired for stealing coffee filters from the office kitchenette, some motherfuckers in the government can get fired when 3,000 Americans are murdered in one morning. I'm supposed to trust you to wage new wars whenever you want, so fucking start acting like you take this shit seriously. Saddam Hussein is dead meat," this guy says. Now, you guys know this news magazine. It's called Newsweek. Comes out once a week, and it concerns itself more or less with the news. And I bought it a couple weeks ago because there was an article that I wanted to read. I can't remember what it was, but they had a little... Newsweek has a little section at the front of their magazine where they just list tidbits of information. It's called Periscope. And recently, they've caught in some flack for breaking major news stories in this little section and then never following up with it. Well, anyway, they had this incredible story a few weeks ago. This is actually before the House submitted its budget for 2004. But the head, this guy who's been chosen to run the September 11th inquiry, the guy who replaced, the benevolent Henry Kissinger. I can't remember if he's a senator or a congressman or what, but he said, "Listen, I have to have more money to pursue the September 11th investigation because they had budgeted $3 million for this guy." And he said, "I want to try to get it up to $15 million. And Newsweek wrote, this is so awesome. Newsweek said, $15 million would be a substantial increase. It's still much less than the $50 million that they've budgeted to investigate the space shuttle tragedy." Now listen, I got choked up when I read about the space shuttle blowing up on re-entry. And I was a kid in eighth grade when the Challenger exploded. And that was also very traumatic. And listen, the bottom line is, I'm not going to ride on a fucking space shuttle. Like, I'm going to work in an office building in Manhattan. I don't, you know, like, you should give some money to investigate the space shuttle, but for fuck's sake, like, get your priorities straight. Investigate international terrorism and whether it was the INS or the CIA or the FBI or the NSA. Like, how did this happen on September 11th? You know, and it's like they're devoting almost 20 times as much money to the foam on the wing of the space shuttle. It's amazing. Like, I open up the New York Times. I try to read the New York Times two or three times a week. You open it up, and the whole middle section is always like four or five pages of space shuttle research. What happened to the foam on the wing? What about this memo when they said that they knew the wing, you know, there was going to be damage with the foam? Why didn't they catch this? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's great, but you know what? Like, I really think that should be a sidebar. The main thing should be the fucking, like, how the September 11th attacks occurred. For God's sake. Sorry. Yeah. That's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, that car ride was twice as long as I thought it was going to be. Wow. And all we ate was Cheez-Its and beef jerky. Woo! Okay. All right. So this is from, we're almost done here. This is from September of 2002. This is obviously before we began Operation Iraqi Freedom. He says, remember those leftover civilians in that country where we waged our last war a few months ago? Do they realize they're one war away from being completely forgotten? Maybe the plan is to feed all the hungry Afghans using the bodies of dead Iraqis. If that's the case, let me just say one thing. I hope leftover Iraqis enjoy the taste of North Koreans. Okay. Bada bing. Hey, that's how the world works. You know, it's like, it's not my fault. You know what I mean? Okay, I'll just show this one. Just for fun, we made this one. Because we were getting so excited about North Korea. He says, this is straight, simple enough. North Korea, what the fuck is wrong with you? Seriously, what's up, North Korea? Why are you acting so crazy? And North Korea says, I don't know. It just feels so good when everyone is looking at me. Okay, so this is from January 19th of this year. It's like the clock is ticking on Iraq. And I don't know if you heard about this holiday that we celebrate in secret every year. Guy says, oh, shit, I totally forgot to send my daughter a Happy National Sanctity of Life Day card. You bum. Did you at least send a National Sanctity of Life Day food basket to some starving Iraqi children? I wanted to, but the store didn't have big enough baskets. Oh, yeah, sorry. National Sanctity of Life Day. This is actually the second year that we've celebrated it. It's not a big deal. You don't get the day off, obviously. But it's a holiday that was put into the congressional record or something. You know, they can have, like, I think they had, like, a Fred Rogers Day when Fred Rogers died. And they just put in all these little special happy days. National Sanctity of Life Day is just this day where we're supposed to pause and remember the sanctity of every child on Earth from the moment of conception. I mean, you can see what the political, what the undercurrent for Happy National Sanctity of Life Day is, right? You know, whatever. So, me and every other hack political cartoonist, you know, thought it would be so great to, like, explore the parallels between, whatever, kids who are alive and starving to death versus, like, these fetuses in the womb. Okay. Now, let's talk about this. So, this was put up on February 10th of 2003, right after we learned that there's this thing called the Domestic Security Enhancement Act, which is like the Patriot Act 2 that John Ashcroft has been working on. Anyway, I put it up feigning ignorance that I didn't know about this act, and I got deluged with emails of people being like, your nightmares come true. It's like, no shit. Anyway, she says, sometimes I wish the Patriot Act was a little patrioter. Isn't there a way to beef it up? He says, I still can't believe they named that thing the fucking USA Patriot Act. Grown-ups did that. Never forget that. I know, but wouldn't it be awesome if they came out with a Patriot Act that was even tougher? Could they do that somehow? He says, you think once they have Benjamin Franklin's body spinning in his grave fast enough, they'll be able to power an internal combustion engine with it? That would solve a bunch of problems all at once. Okay. This is the last one. This is from February of 2003. She says, remember when our president's dad, like, believe it or not, he was also a president, so crazy. She says, remember when our president's dad told Saddam Hussein's people to rise up against him and then played that funny joke where he allowed them to be slaughtered? She says, what a gas. Actually, you're thinking of when we supported Saddam's genocide against the Kurds. He says, all I know is Thomas Friedman said some people are about to get free. So if you know who Thomas Friedman is, I think he's won the Pulitzer 3 times. He's a New York Times columnist. This is the final rant of the evening. Thomas Friedman is I guess you would call him like a liberal, you know, like a centrist liberal or whatever. His whole thing is that we totally botched and bungled and blew our chance at waging like a legitimate, that is, multilateral war against Saddam Hussein. But now that we're in this crazy position, we should make the most of it and free the Iraqi people and make the world a better place. He's really into this theory of heal the world. Is his theory. I think he believes in like a benevolent, benevolent system of American intervention to secure liberty and rights for everyone. But the guy is like so relentless, and he'll admit this, so relentlessly optimistic, and always willing to look on the bright side of things and wish for the best and just hope against hope that Bush and fucking Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, of all people, will somehow stick to their guns this time and actually follow through on the rebuilding of Iraq. It's a noble sentiment. Like, I hate feeling skeptical about the motives of my government because I fucking pay them, you know, to do what they do. But at some point, I feel like that level of optimism in the face of so much history, especially the history concerning these actual guys over the past 20 years. It's not like this is a brand new administration. We have a clean slate and these dudes are totally into helping the people in Iraq. Like, fucking Dick Cheney doesn't stay up late at night thinking about these skinny-ass Iraqi kids with nothing to eat. But anyway, for Thomas Friedman to sit there and just hope and hope and hope and, oh my God, President Bush, please read this editorial. You gotta stick to your guns this time. I think at some point that level of optimism becomes sort of offensive. In a way, it's like a willful naivete. It's kind of like, dude, you're just like, it's like enabling someone. You know what I mean? It's like, pretend you have a relative who's an alcoholic, and you also have this huge empty room with 600 full bottles of gin in it. And it's like, God, you know, I hope when Uncle Joe goes into that empty room, like, I just really hope he won't, you know, drink any of that gin. It's like, well, you fucking idiot. Get rid of the gin, for fuck's sake. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the same thing with this guy, Thomas Friedman. But anyway, I don't want to end on a negative note. Like, I hope it's right. Like, I hope we help out Iraq. You know, it'd be great. Maybe the people in Afghanistan will find some comfort in that. I don't know. But anyway, so that's more or less the end of it. It kind of disintegrated, but thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you.